and took a red apple from a blue fruit bowl by the bookshelf. He often had an apple at the end of his day. Apples were his favorite fruit, not just because of their taste. Apples were also... never mind. He cut the fruit in two and went back to the hobby workshop, and then he realized. His entire being understood, and with unseeing eyes he looked out towards the garden. Isn't it odd? He thought, without really knowing what he meant. Then he remembered Ethel. Ethel was his mother. One day, Ethel will write a book about him, without having the least understanding of what he had been doing. But to be fair, one can say that it was not easy. The man's life consisted of too many numbers and secrets. He was different. Besides, he was young, at least in a mother's eyes. And although he had never been regarded as a beauty, and had lost his fine runner's physique since a court decision in Knutsford, he was not bad-looking. Ever since he was little, and could not tell right from left, and thought that Christmas came at pretty much any time of year, sometimes often and sometimes seldom, like other beautiful, enjoyable days, he had thought thoughts which were totally not of their time. He became a mathematician who dedicated himself to something as prosaic as the art of engineering. An unconventional thinker who got it into his head that our intelligence is mechanical, or even computable, as a long snaking series of numbers. But above all, and this mothers find especially hard to understand, on this day in June, he no longer had the strength to go on living. And he therefore continued with his preparations, which would later be seen as strangely complicated. It was just that his concentration was disturbed. He heard something. Footsteps down by the front door, he thought. The crunch of gravel. And an absurd thought struck him. Someone is bringing good news, perhaps from far away, from India, or from another time. He gave a laugh, or sobbed, hard to tell which. And he started moving. And even if he heard nothing more than the sound of dripping against the roof, his mind stuck with the thought, there's someone out there, a friend worth listening to. And as he passed the desk, he thought, want to, don't want to, like a child pulling the petals off a flower. He perceived every detail in the corridor with a vibrant precision that would have fascinated him on a better day. With a sleepwalker's steps, he went into the bedroom and saw the observer lying on the bedside table and the wristwatch with the black leather strap, and right next to it, he laid the half apple. He thought of the moon shining behind the school building at Sherburn, and he lay down on his back on the bed. He looked composed. Chapter 2. It rained the next day as well, and young Detective Constable Leonard Carrell came walking along Adlington Road. When he drew level with Brown's Lane, he took off his trilby because he felt warm despite the rain, and he thought of his bed, not the miserable bed in his flat, but the one waiting at his aunt's in Knutsford. And as he did so, his head sank down to his shoulder, as if he were about to fall asleep. He did not like his job. He did not like the salary, the walking, the paperwork, or godforsaken Wilmslow, where nothing ever happened. It had got to the point where even now he felt nothing but emptiness. And yet the housekeeper who called had mentioned a white froth around the dead man's mouth, and a smell of poison in the house. And in the past, a report like this would definitely have sparked some life in Carrell. Now he just plodded along the puddles of water and the garden hedges. Behind lay the field and the railway. It was Tuesday, the 8th of June, 1954, and he glanced down, looking for the signs with the house names on them.